Texas. That's right, you're not from Texas. That's right, you're not from Texas. Texas wants you anyway. So I was.
I am sitting here at Worldcon, and why don't you tell folks who you are and what you do? Because you can do that better than I can.
My name is Rebecca Rowland. I am a writer. Also work in the healthcare field.
Interesting.
I have published a novel, Shards of History, through World Weaver Press, and I'm currently working on a sequel to that novel. And I've also published several short stories. Forthcoming, I have a short story in a Weird West
anthology.
Thank you for Stupefying
it's late,
Stories.
We're all tired.
I know. I've been talking nonstop since I got here, which is very.
I don't even know what day it is anymore.
I know. I thought, wow, where did all these extra people come from today?
Oh my God!
It's the
don't
weekend.
Even. Yes, it's crazy. It's like the population tripled.
Yeah. Yes, and I live in New Mexico, but I grew up in Texas, so this feels like coming home for me, although I don't miss the humid heat.
Prettier
whatsoever.
Sunsets, New Mexico desert or Texas?
That's a tough one.
Yeah, that is. That is.
I've seen really nice ones in both places. Mm-hmm. I have been at South Padre Island when the sun has been going down,
okay. And
that is absolutely beautiful. But New Mexico has consistently great sunsets.
It's like every night it's a painting, you know. It's just gorgeous. The purples, the reds, the desert, yeah.
And living in Albuquerque, the Sandia Mountains are right there, and Sandia means watermelon, so they kind of turn like this pinkish watermelon color when the sun's going down. So it's just beautiful.
Well, I live in Denver. And I'm well versed in Albuquerque, and one of the things that I've noticed, so I grew up in Fresno. I only ever went to Yosemite for field trips. I lived in Tennessee in Chattanooga. I never went to any of the really cool places there. When I moved to Denver, I made a point of always going up into the mountains, going on the 14ers, going to Estes Park. I went to Royal Gorge before it burned down. I've gone all these places. Now, living in Albuquerque, Balloon Festival?
Yes.
You go?
Yes.
It looks so freaking cool.
They claim that it's the most photographed event in the world.
I don't doubt it.
And, I mean, there have been people out there handing out, like they're selling cameras and film and batteries for your cameras. And it's if you haven't been there, it's just an unbelievable event. You are on the field around the balloons. Have the burners hissing. You have the burners giving off some heat, which is great because it's usually pretty chilly that early in the day. And then all these colors, just a rainbow of colors all around.
And it just fills the sky.
It does. And it's like, you can't help but be happy when you're out there.
Sure.
Yeah.
So, another inside baseball question. Little Anita's, hole in the wall, grape, New Mexican food or horrible chain? I'm putting you on the spot.
Yeah.
You didn't know I knew this stuff.
I have to say Little Anita's is probably in the middle of my list of New Mexican restaurants.
Okay.
It's definitely not on the bottom, but it's not on the top either. It's good, but I would say my favorite place, and everybody has their own opinion, is this place called Cervantes, because I think they have the best red chili, and red chili is what I like.
Okay.
And people are big on the chili in New Mexico.
Yes, they are in Colorado as well, but they tend to like the green chili, and Little Anita's is known in Colorado for the green chili.
Okay.
You got Little Anita's and you got Santiago's.
Yeah.
And Santiago's they both have like the award-winning green chili. And I liked Little Anita's because it was a little hole in the wall by my apartment when I first moved there. And you could go there and that was like the only place I could get really spicy Mexican food in Colorado. So that's why I liked them. And what's funny is I was working for a company that brought some people up from Albuquerque and they were going to join our company. We were going to merge. And I said, hey, let's go to Little Anita's. And they're like, no, that's a horrible place. That's a chain. We don't eat there. How dare you mention Little Anita's? And I'm like, okay, sorry. So, I don't like to like go through the whole book stuff with you, but why don't you tell people a little bit about the book so that they understand that. We'll get the obligatory part out of the way.
Okay. So the book is called Shards of History. It's been out for about a year now.
World Weaver Press.
World Weaver Press.
Remind me of that after, because I have a completely non-podcast related question about that.
Okay. I'll try. Try to remember. It is basically about a woman who risks exile in order to convince her people that the creatures that live around their valley home are not the enemies that they think they are.
Okay.
So it started out actually as a short story when I was at Odyssey in 2007.
Mm-hmm.
I had this image of like huge cliffs and some sort of people that lived in basically the center of those cliffs. So they didn't live at the bottom, they didn't live at the top. And I thought, you know, well, how would they get there? And then I realized that they didn't necessarily have to be humans living there. So I sort of came up with this idea of these creatures. They're sort of like gargoyles in appearance and in function, but they're called Jegadoons, and they're kind of small and short and humanoid and winged, and I think they're pretty cool. And so the story kind of took off from there, and I was on a deadline. I had to turn something in, you know, like the next day. And so I just wrote this like short story just like, as fast as I could. And it didn't feel like it was finished when I turned it in. And I just thought, I thought it was like a really cool world, and I wanted to explore more of it. So it blew up into a novel after Odyssey, and I pulled a lot of New Mexico into.
I was gonna say, because you mentioned like cliff dwelling and I know that was kind of big. There's areas of Colorado and New Mexico where they have the preserved cliff dwelling sites.
Yes.
You know, and I know, I don't, and actually now I'm wondering, in Manitou Springs we've had a lot of flooding, I'm wondering if that hit the cliff dweller sites there, but I know that that's something big that was in both New Mexico and Colorado.
Yes, Mesa Verde, yep. I think is in Colorado, Bandelier National Monument is in New Mexico, so those were the kinds of things that I started picturing when I was thinking about these cliffs.
Complete and total side note, if the listeners ever get the chance, they need to go to these places because they're so gorgeous.
Yes.
I mean, just the way they're laid out, the stone, it's just, it's gorgeous. There's no other way to describe it.
Yeah, it's, they're beautiful places, fascinating history.
Ancient.
Yes.
We don't have a lot of ancient in this country, so...
That's right.
When you know, you go to... It's like we can't go to these, you know, 1,200-year-old cathedrals, but we can go to the cliff-dwelling places, and
Yeah, and then you get a feel of history, and
yes.
It's just amazing to think that people lived there, you know, so long ago, and brings up the question, you know, what happened to them? Where did they go? So I also really like the Valles Caldera area,
mm-hmm.
as
okay.
well. It's a volcanic valley, and I kind of used it as a little bit of inspiration for the setting as well. Although in the novel, it's actually a much larger valley than the Valles Caldera is. That's a really fascinating place as well. Really beautiful place. They've actually filmed quite a few movies and TV shows there because it's so remote, and it just kind of looks like a little bit of like the Old West.
Right. Yeah. There's a couple places like that. There's also there's Monument Valley, and I don't remember if that's the place that's up in Wyoming. There's the place where John Ford shot all of his movies. And it's the ones with the big stone pillars in the background, you know. And he shot all the movies there. All his westerns were shot there. And there's just something about that area. You know, it's wide open spaces. There's nobody out there. It's just gorgeous.
Yes.
I think Airwolf was there too.
Oh, Airwolf.
Yes.
Oh.
I don't know. They had the Airwolf would lower down the into the cave and it would come back and it was all shot in that same valley.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah. I love that show.
Now, did you love the original or the one that they continued on USA with the brother?
I like the original.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What they did was Jan Michael Vincent, or was that his name? Jan Michael Vincent?
I think so.
He left the show. USA bought it, and they kept it going with, like, he found his brother, finally, and his brother was alive, and his brother took over Airwolf. And was like, and Jan Michael Vincent's gone. You know, whatever. Anyway. There's my nerd cred. I have tons of TV nerd cred. So it sounds like you're really, like, kind of mixing a little bit of the culture and the history of the actual area, just pulling from that a little bit as inspiration for what you're writing.
Yes. I also, around that time, traveled up to the Pacific Northwest. And I pulled a little bit of that as inspiration as well. Like the Columbia River Gorge area is, that's a really beautiful area as well. In the world of the novel, I have pretty big waterfall that feeds into the main river of the valley. And the story starts with, something is blocking the waterfall and, there's a drought going on. My character and her people are trying to figure out what's causing it. So I found that area sort of filtered into the story as well while I was writing it.
That's cool. And so how did you go from short story to novel? I mean, you felt like it was unfinished, but how did you know it wasn't going to be just another 1,000 words and it would be done? Versus, I'm going to write 50,000 words.
The short story ended with the main character leaving her home. And she was going to go find out what was really going on with the river. And so I knew that wasn't going to be, just a few thousand more words. I knew that was going to be a lot more. It was a real learning experience for me. That was the third novel-length piece that I had ever written. So I'm still learning, and I was definitely learning back then. So I kept going back and forth between rough draft and world building, and I found that the world building was so much fun that I really definitely wanted to make...
It's like the loudest phone ringing I have ever heard in my life. Wow. Well, did the short story actually get published?
No, I submitted it a bit, and then I realized that it didn't stand on its own very well. So I just kind of trumped it and just kept working on it as a novel-length piece.
Okay. Gotcha. So... I have heard of people, publishing the short story and then doing the novel anyway.
Yes.
So the short story never appeared.
It didn't.
Okay. As far as what I like to do is I like to ask people a little bit about, the difference between doing the short story and doing the novel. Mm-hmm. Short story, you've got an economy of words. You want to pick the right things. Novel, obviously, doesn't work that way. You have so much more room to do that. And do you find it easier to do short fiction or long fiction? Do you have to switch in your brain to go from one to the other? Or how does that work for you?
I think there's definitely a switch that you have to make. I think for me, short stories are a little bit easier because you get right to the heart of the matter. You're picking out this one moment in a character's life and focusing in on that. So it's a little bit easier to get a beginning, a middle, and an end and have some sort of resolution. In a novel, you get a lot more room to play with. So you kind of pick, you can pick a time frame, you can pick a day, you can pick a week, you can pick years. It's so open that sometimes it's hard to make decisions on what you should focus in on. I really enjoy doing both, but short stories are a little bit more satisfying because I can get a short story done in, within like a week, and get feedback and then send it out, whereas a novel takes so much more time and effort and commitment. And you know, if you write it and you discover something doesn't work on page 10 and it throws off everything else, then whoa, that's a lot of work that you have to do.
Especially back in the day when all you had was a typewriter.
Oh yeah.
That was always fun.
Yeah.
I used to have the typewriter, and number one, I would leave the paper in for so long that it would stay permanently curled because I would be stuck. And number two, as I was changing things, and I'd do the whiteout strips. I'm dating myself big time now.
I found when I found a story that I wrote when I was a teenager on my typewriter.
Yeah.
And it was, you know, overall, it actually wasn't as bad as I thought.
Was it cringeworthy?
Yeah. It was kind of cringeworthy, but not as bad as I thought it was. So I kind of buried it in the drawer, and I thought, no.
I found a box of stuff like that, and I was like, oh, this will be cool. I'll scan these pages. I'll put them on my blog and share them with people. And I started looking through it, and I'm like, oh, no one's ever saying this. No. Box it back up. Tape, corner. Never see it again.
Yeah, I think some people end up throwing that stuff out, and I like to hold on to it. I don't know why, but...
Well, it's probably you think, like I do, I spent time on this. There must be something of redeeming value in here. And every once in a while, you have to look at it and remind yourself that there's not.
Yeah.
No, don't look back. Look forward.
Yes.
So, the book is out right now. Can you get it on Amazon?
Yes, you can get it on any of the major electronic retailers. So
okay, is it the big trade paperback?
It's available as a paperback and also as an ebook.
Okay, good. And short fiction, do you have short fiction out there right now that people can find?
Yes, I also have a short story collection.
Oh, good.
It's The King of Ash and Bones and Other Stories, and that's available as an ebook at all the major retailers as well.
Okay.
And I have a short story coming out in Stupefying Stories, which I think I already mentioned at the beginning of the podcast, and that should be coming out pretty soon as well.
Okay. So do you see yourself as a novelist or short story writer, or both, or just a writer?
I just see myself as a writer. Okay. I like to do both. I like to switch back and forth between short stories and novels.
Okay. So, how's your con experience?
It's been great. This is my second World Con.
Okay, what was your first?
My first was in Denver.
Oh, okay.
In 2008. And I didn't know very many people back then, so and I'm an introvert, so it's really hard for me to just
go
to
people.
Sure. No, I got you. And I'm sure no one.
I personally am horribly, horribly shy, so I never talk to anybody.
So I kind of talked to the people that I knew back then. I went to panels, and then I would kind of go and sit in my room and kind of collect myself before I had to go back out again.
You're like, okay, I got to get ready. I got to go see people. I got to mingle. Yeah, and you just prepare yourself mentally. Yes.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
But here, I know a lot more people now, so it's been a lot more fun. Socializing more than actually going to panels at this point.
Yep. But I haven't been to a single panel.
Yeah, I've been to a couple of really good panels. There's one on medical ethics, which I thought an hour is not anywhere near enough to talk about this kind of stuff.
But, right.
You know, you could probably do a whole convention.
Was it medical ethics in general or medical ethics in science fiction and
medical
fantasy?
Ethics and science fiction. Yes.
Okay. Yeah. So like the island of Dr. Moreau.
Yes. Damn. Yeah.
So what's your medical background? You said you worked in medical.
I do. I'm a physical therapist.
Okay. Gotcha. Do you guys have like a guild?
We do have a national organization.
So if I tell you that I didn't actually ever finish the physical therapy that I was supposed to do when I was like 17, and I messed up my ankle, that's not going to like get back to that person, right?
No. And it's not unusual for 17-year-olds not to finish.
Yeah, they wanted me to do the up on the tiptoes, down, up, you know, and it was just, of course I'm not going to do it. Come on. I was playing volleyball. And we had to play in the gym. So we were on the basketball courts playing volleyball. And I went up and I hit the ball and I came down and kept falling. And the coach, of course, boys PE coach, get up, shake it off, walk it off, you know, blah, blah. I'm like, I can't get up. He's like, come on, you can get up, you can get up. I'm like, no. And he's like, he had people drag me over and put me on the bench. And I'm laying there. And he walked up and he said, are you going to get up off your ass? Oh. And I'm like, what? He goes, I'm going to call the nurse. Apparently my ankle had swollen up and was kind of coming out of my sock and my shoe. Anyway, I had this little hairline break and I had to go to the sports medicine center and do physical therapy. And I did it when I was there, but when they sent me home, I never did it.
Yeah, that sounds pretty typical. Yeah.
So, do you have to do that kind of stuff? Do you ever find yourself trying to work your experiences as a physical therapist into your fiction?
I don't really do it intentionally. I think I end up with a lot of characters who are healers or kind of work in that capacity. Because I do love my day job, and I think it just carries over. I like to think that I write convincing injuries.
Okay, yeah.
So I think it does carry over a little bit.
Very cool. All right, so what does the future hold for Rebecca?
Well, I am working on a sequel to my novel right now.
Great.
I've also written another novel. It's a new adult urban fantasy. It's kind of the first in a series.
I'm showing her my 2-bit urban fantasy hack ribbon.
It's about a young woman who inherits her family's necromancy, and so she's so powerful that it attracts the attention of three Luminancers who are like self-proclaimed angels, and they're out to destroy her kind.
Wow, interesting. Yeah. Okay.
So we'll see how that turns out.
Well, good.
Working on another short story right now for sort of a Halloween contest.
Okay.
That's pretty much it. That's keeping me busy.
All right. And where can people find you online? Are you doing social media? Do you have a blog, a website?
Yes, I'm on Twitter at Rebecca_Roland.
Okay.
I'm on Facebook at Rebecca.Roland. And I have a blog, which is RebeccaRolandWriter.blogspot.com.
Okay, so you joined Blogspot.
Yes.
Okay. And any other convention plans or anything like that coming up anytime soon?
I'm just going to keep soaking it all in and meeting people.
You going to drive up for Mile High Con?
I don't know. probably not.
Okay.
I need to space out my excitement a little bit.
A month is not enough.
And I just went to another con last weekend.
Where'd you go?
I went to BubanaCon, which
is... Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's
about my friend Travis Hearman was at BubanaCon.
Okay.
BubanaCon.
I think I met him, actually, very briefly.
He's a very nice guy.
Yeah.
Yep.
It's a really great little con.
Mm-hmm.
I love it.
Very cool. Well, I want to thank you for coming on.
Thanks for
having
me.
And sharing all this great stuff about your writing, and I wish you well.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the SF Signal podcast. Our podcast is available for download every week at sfsignal.com or via iTunes. Look for the link to subscribe in the sidebar at sfsignal.com, and you can also search SF Signal in iTunes to find the feed. To comment about this or any of our podcast episodes, please call our voicemail line at 720-277-9082. If you enjoyed this podcast, help us boost the signal by telling your friends. Visit the Hugo Award-winning sfsignal.com for all your speculative fiction needs. John D. and the SF Signal regulars offer up new content every day. From weekly mind melts featuring your favorite authors, editors, and artists from the SFNF field, to book reviews, original articles and essays, new author spotlights, movie reviews, videos, science fiction, fantasy, and horror tidbits, free fiction roundups, and the new genre-related crowdfunding roundups. Click the RSS button in the sidebar to ensure you never miss a post. The SF Signal podcast is powered by the Functional Nerds.
Romeo, Romeo, wherefore art thou, Romeo?
Angry robot.
Wah, wah.
Thinking and crap.
And scene.